welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Eddie Packham, and we are in your ears in association with the magnificent Flowers Unlimited. Well then, we are now 10 games in, and we sit 8 in the table after Liverpool beat us for the second time in a week last Saturday. Very much like the game at the Amex last Wednesday, it was a close-fought affair, and the reality is we're a little bit disappointed to come away with nothing, particularly after our first half display. So it's a good job that we've got a nice, easy game to get ourselves back on track then. Hang on. It's a very wounded Man City who just lost their first league game for over a year at Bournemouth at the weekend. Good luck with that one then. On the show today, I welcome back, fresh from his honeymoon, is Alan Wares. And with us is someone who's been described as many as a dullard, a nerd, a spreadsheet obsessive, and a boffin, which sounds a little bit like it might be Kieran Maguire, which is amazing because it is Kieran Maguire. And with Kieran, Kieran has a live Price of Football coming up at Brighton's Unitarian Church on the 15th of November, with all the proceeds going to the Samaritans. And joining Kieran is Dean Gallagher from the Brighton Samaritans. And we're also delighted to welcome back Dan Testu, who hasn't been in for a little while, and he's got the third edition of Brighton Hove Albion on this day out now. Welcome one and all. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Well done for getting through that.
Yeah, that's quite wordy. Dean, welcome to the show. Like both Dan and Kieran have been semi-regulars over the years, but we don't know anything about you. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us all about your Albion supporting history?
Well, cheers, Odie. So I've been an Albion season ticket holder since the Goldstone days. And yeah, included the sojourn to Gillingham. Sorry, my mouth's just full of sick. Sorry. So,
We had to hear that.
And, you know, I think having done all those hard yards over the years, the payback's coming now. The football we're playing is incredible. And it's a shame about the atmosphere, but I'm sure we'll sort that out in due course. But yeah, it's a fantastic thing to be able to go and be with 30,000 others, so it's great.
Yeah, what is it about the atmosphere you don't like?
It's flat most of the time, isn't it?
Well, it depends how bad the referee is, mostly.
Tell you one thing I would say about that. I mean, for all the fact that, and I know we'll talk about it more, but for all the fact that Liverpool fans were saying, oh, it was the Anfield, you know, the cop and everything that sort of like got their team over the line. Watching the last sort of 15 minutes, that atmosphere, I wouldn't say it was flat, but it was tense. And I think that sometimes there's a difference between flat and tense, in as much as they do sort of emit the same sound, which is usually silence or something very quiet to it. So is it flatness, and sort of a register of disinterest, Dean, or is it for you a bit of tension?
I wouldn't say it's disinterest at all, Alan. I do think that there's genuinely, because that north stand is so shallow, it just, the sound that emits gets lost in the ether, and actually having that more condensed, possibly having two ends full of noise might actually help. I'd just like to see them explore different ways to actually improve the atmosphere.
Yeah. Now, Kieran, actually, I mean, as the only one of us in the room here that has actually graced the Amex turf whilst there's been a crowd in there, what's it sound like in the centre circle?
I was there for Renf, and that was, 2016, something like that. For me, it was incredible. Well, first of all, yeah, I was on the same pitch as Peter Ward and Gary Nelson. So I was just enjoying every second. And I only played for 10 minutes. You do hear an awful lot. And admittedly, it's one of those sort of perverse situations, is that the smaller the crowd, the more you hear. Mm-hmm. Because you can hear it, you can pick out individual voices. But even so, sort of the general positive and negative vibes, especially when Andy Johnson decided to go, he was going to play 90 minutes 6 weeks after retiring as a professional footballer.
He wasn't the only one, Kieran, as well, was he?
No.
Is their other ringer played 90 minutes as well.
Well, can I just wanted to fill in a historical thing here. Is that the following year, I can't remember who it was, our sort of specific ringer was, but Palace moaned that he played more than the 20 minutes he should have done. I'm thinking, just 1 year ago, you had two ringers played 90 minutes.
It was Sean Derry, wasn't it, the other one? Yeah, took me a while to remember who it was.
Well, I told you about 30. But so yes, you've played on the hallowed turf, Kieran. But so have you, Dan, albeit you've scored a goal that no one saw, a bit like Gary Nelson.
Well, Alan, yeah, no one saw it apart from obviously the people on the pitch and the crowd of 12 who were in the stadium at the time. But you know when stories over a period of time, they get exaggerated.
Go on,
and
then
before you know it, you beat, 12 players and you score from 50 yards. Basically, Joel Essex, who you know, can validate my goal. And I'll talk you
go
through
on,
it. Okay.
Go on, we're waiting.
If you insist. No, it was an Albion staff game against AITC, and I was playing for AITC in a home kit, and all of my team knew how much of an Albion fan I was, and the rest of the team were indifferent to the Albion. In goal for the Albion staff team was a Palace fan who did not want me to score. So they kept lumping the ball over the top for me to run onto because my team wanted me to score, and I was 39 at the time, very unfit with one knee. So they kept doing that. So I was pretty much running on, running on fumes. The ball came down the West End channel. It bounced inside and it sat up. And in my head, I'm going, oh my God, this is perfect. And I absolutely launched it from the edge of the box and it went straight as a die in the top corner with about a millimetre under the bar and next to the post.
Right, where
it's
the
best goal I've
live.
Ever scored. It's the
did
best
the,
goal.
Did the ball stay ball?
Did the ball what? Stay
did
hit?
Did the ball stay ball? Did it not move? Did it not spin?
No, it didn't. It went dead straight. Needless to say, I've dined out on that a few times. Only when I get asked, though, obviously. I don't talk about
sure.
That
what happened when you woke up?
Well, the next day, I had a raging hangover and a sore back from getting patted on the back loads of times. Okay. But, mate, it was one of the best moments of my life. It was just, what dreams are made of.
So this is what happens when we have a game that no one really wants to talk about. But we are going to talk about it. And we did go to Liverpool, second time in the week, facing the Reds. No real surprises in this starting lineup other than Carlos Baleba dropped to the bench, which I was a bit surprised about, Kieran.
Yes, I don't know whether that was a deliberate move that he's already being linked with Arsenal and Liverpool as a potential signing in January. Or they just decided to go with something slightly different tactically. Iari has really come on mm-hmm. in the last two or three games. So I think we need to give the coach some credit. We all assume that because a player played well in match A, that he is equally fit and equally capable and has performed equally well in training between match A and match B. Now, the coach gets the opportunity to see whether that is the case in reality and picks the side on the basis of what he's seeing in training. And I think the decision was actually vindicated in terms of what Fabian did.
Yeah. I mean the game itself, it was a traditional game of two halves, wasn't it? Because, we should have been home and hose after that first half performance. We were absolutely magnificent. Obviously, former Albion target Darwin Nunes did have a very, very good chance early doors. But after that, it was all Albion. And Ferdy gave us a lead with an absolutely wonderful team goal. And what I really liked about it, Dan, was the fact that, we've talked about this on the show quite a lot, about the speed in transition is not always as quick as it possibly should be. But in this game, we saw various instances throughout the game where the thought process and the movement was that much quicker.
Yeah, it came across. I mean, obviously after the midweek loss in the cup, not to bounce back because it's only one game, but the way that we started at Anfield just blew me away. I mean, like I said before the show began, I was in a pub in Nijmegen in the Netherlands, and I dragged a few of my Dutch mates and said, "We've got to watch the game." And no, they were all sort of going, "Do you always play like this?" I was like, "Well, not all the time, but we do occasionally play this well because that's where we're at now." And the fact that you said then the way that transition should be. You know, it's like we're being an Albion fan is so different from what it was just a few years ago, because we discuss stuff like this and we're playing a team that's got world-class players, like Salah's goal. I mean, what can you do about that?
No,
nothing.
Quite.
Show him outside.
You know,
so we can do. Show him outside. I mean. Don't let him cut in.
We've got to a point where we're analysing. Well, obviously, that's, you know, part of the reason for this show existing. But we're analysing every single element of how we play, whereas back in the day we didn't do that because the quality was so much lower. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? I just, yeah, I
mean,
it's just, it's incredible. It's,
everything back then, Dan, was in context, wasn't it? I mean, we had decent players, like, for instance, when we had Glenn Murray and Ashley Barnes playing in the Championship. You know, all right, they went on to be Premier League players. But, you know, Elliot Bennett, we absolutely raved about him. We had, you know, Adam Elabd was an absolute hero. Everything is in context, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, of course.
And Dean, I would argue that, I mean, Dan was saying that the football wasn't particularly brilliant. And obviously back in the Gillingham days and the dying days at the Goldstone, it definitely wasn't. But I mean, the football we started playing under Gus Poyet was magnificent, wasn't it?
So a context, sorry to jump in, but the context out, obviously I wasn't referring to the 2010-11 season when we had a magnificent squad and we blitzed the league and we won every game in April. I wasn't referring to that. I was referring to a bit further back, which AD is now alluding to, the Gillingham years when we were, obviously, I'm not going to swear on the radio, but we were absolutely...
Done it again, Dan.
Sorry?
You've done it again. You used the G word again.
Yeah, sorry. But Dean, as someone who, I had a season to get there for 2 years as well, so we've definitely met, probably in the beer garden of the cricketers.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you not find the camaraderie? I know this has been mentioned many times, but the camaraderie of the Gillingham years is, well, what is the reason that we're still alive as a club, I think, because we couldn't let it go, right?
Yeah, I can remember those dark and distant nights when we were rocking up thinking, why the hell are we doing this? Seriously.
Do you remember when... Sorry, mate, go on.
No.
I was just going to say, do you remember when Rod Thomas made that save? And I think we were 3-0 down. It was in the Rainham end, and he tipped it over the bar. So obviously, for younger listeners, Rod Thomas was our right winger at the time. And he
not
tipped,
our goalie.
He wasn't our goalkeeper. The goalkeeper was still on the pitch. He tipped a shot over the bar, and I'd just come back from the loo, so I was sitting in the Gordon Rose stand, and I sat down on the terrace, and I cried. And I'm like, I was sober. I'm like, what am I doing with my life when I'm watching on a Tuesday night in the winter and there's 1,200 people here? Rod Thomas has just tipped the shot over the bar to make, they scored the penalty, 4-0 down. I'm like, just what on earth am I doing?
Yeah.
It was just,
Dean, talk us some happy Gillingham, I dare you. There's an oxymoron. Talk us some happy Gillingham.
Look, I think the black humour we all showed when we had to go, and using that phrase, we had to go.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because it was our club and it's still our club, and we still, whilst we don't own it, it feels like we own it and we've got a part of it because we're so heavily invested in it, and that will never change.
Yeah, well said.
Absolutely. I mean, it's I think that it's we had over those 14 years, and I think that, and I say this on the show on a sort of semi-regular basis, so sorry, AD, if I'm going to, you know, you end up tuning out here, is that we had, what, three or four battles over the course of 14, 15 years. And I think it's so important that the story is told and retold. It's not a case of, right, that was it, you know, 25 years ago. Because, you know, even this week, this month, these things are still relevant and pertinent, where you've got sort of don't exploit loyalty. Now, we've got a club where we've got a board that isn't, certainly not to the same extent of other clubs, exploiting loyalty. But by the same token, if the other clubs are feeling that that is the case and they've made a good case, yes, we're happy to support them. I mean, when we say we know where we've come from, you like to think that you're actually supporting the smaller clubs in this instance. Mm. But when you've got the likes of West Ham and Wolves and other clubs like that being exploited, Kieran, by money men who I think have probably themselves lost the concept of customer base and fan loyalty and just see it as fodder. This is where the likes of us on every level need to step up. Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing some work with Spirit of Shankly next week, and I was talking to the Everton supporters, Everton Shareholders Association last week, and it is certainly, you know, I work in Liverpool. It's a very sensitive topic. Also, having spoken to West Ham and Spurs supporters group, I don't think we realise how lucky we are to have Tony. Well, no, I think we do. But yeah, we all know that Tony is the best owner in the Premier League. And in Paul Barber, we've got the best chief executive. I think if we had 20 Paul Barbers in charge of, you know, as running 20 clubs, we wouldn't be having this discussion, because he knows the difference between cost and value. Hmm. And he knows that, yes, the Albion could charge more on a match-by-match basis, and we'd still get 30,000 people turning up. But there is an understanding, and also the knowledge, you know, Dean referred, and you've referred to, we know our history, and we know that without the battles that were fought in those intervening years, that we wouldn't have a club. And Tony Bloom knows that as well. And to be fair to Paul Barber, you know, he's invested in it, and we are fortunate. The new people coming into clubs, they see that the clubs are losing money. They've now got the perfect excuse to put up prices. And that perfect excuse is the PSR rules. We don't want to do it, but we're forced to do it, because otherwise we'd risk a points deduction. It's absolute nonsense, but it is a narrative which the clubs are prepared to communicate and the press are prepared to print.
Yeah, I mean, is that what happened with Aston Villa and their Champions League prices? Because they were banding out the PSR as an excuse for the charging £80 a ticket.
Well, it was £97 a ticket, I think.
Yeah, it was.
Was the highest prices. That was the vindication. Completely ignoring the fact that Aston Villa were getting £30 million just for participating in the Champions League. So it's something which, as soon as you start to analyse the numbers and go through them in depth, it's an argument which doesn't hold up, but it's an argument which we are going to get treated to us. And then they will say, well, hold on. Yeah, first of all, we won the game. And secondly, the fixture was sold out. So from an economics point of view, they'll say that the decision was the right one to make.
So actually, with the kind of a back of a fag packet calculation, if the Albion had done the same and arbitrarily added say £15 to the cost of a ticket, like, you know, if in Europe, I mean, obviously at Villa, I think they probably near doubled it, but if they added £15, assuming a sellout, that's an extra £450,000 per game. Although obviously the Albion wouldn't see all of that. But if you're saying that then a club gets 30 million, which is obviously, you know, over 60 times that amount just for being in that, then, you know, surely the owners can actually see how insipid their argument is.
Yes, but surely we as fans, and the problem we've got, there's two economic issues. First of all, Aston Villa are a monopoly supplier of Aston Villa. Mm. And secondly, what they are offering is an addictive product. And, you know, Dan and Dean have just both said, we don't know why we did it. I tell you the reason why you guys did it, it's because you're addicts. And I'm an addict, and you're all addicts. We're addicts to Brighton Hove Albion. Mm. And if you are an addict, not consuming the product and not getting your fix, no matter how crap that fix is something very, very difficult to give up.
Yeah. Not to be confusing ourselves with Charlton Athletic fans, of course, which would be an addict. Not bad.
But I mean, I think the other point that's been made, and I think we'd all make it across the scale, is a historical sort of review that why did we do it? Well, you know, 25 years on, we can look back and we know why we did it, because the alternatives don't bear thinking about. You know, no Brighton and Hove Albion. And it's not even necessarily about an addiction here. It's about having anything in the first place. And we're happy, more than happy, collectively and individually, to justify what we did, why we did it, how we did it. And the fact that managed to rope in, and this, I think, was one of the crowning glories of the fact we managed to rope in so many fans of other clubs at times when, you know, there was even more insularity amongst supporters. You know, we managed to get so many people down for Fans United. And I think this is where, certainly from my point of view, and I don't know how many fans this applies, Brighton fans this applies to, I always feel that for every fan or every club that was represented at something like Fans United, I think that we owe them on a certain level a debt of gratitude. And that if they're in the same boat, that we'd like to think that we're going to do the same, because that addiction is well sought across society and certainly within football. You know, we can all recognise kindred spirits.
Well, we can. And I remember going to Wrexham when there was a Fans United, and that was, you know, that was a significant input from Albion fans that day. And we are great. We should be eternally grateful to those fans that turned up, because what was it, 5-0 we won that day?
Yeah.
And we stayed up on goal difference.
Yep. That, we certainly did.
Without support of Charlton and Palace and Manchester United and Liverpool and everybody else that turned up that day, there's at least a 50-50 chance there'd be no Brighton Hove Albion today.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, Hartlepool fans are really still very upset about that. They felt very outnumbered that day.
Well, you have to remember. You also have to remember is the second highest number of visiting fans that particular day was Hartlepool. You know, and they really were on the receiving end of that day. I mean, I think there's a lot of them that were actually grateful that they were there, for those that could see the game.
I wouldn't call it an addiction. I'd call it just belonging, and feeling of belonging to something that's bigger than you, and you're a part of it. And you know, and obviously the Gillingham years for me personally, it's you know, family, dad, uncle, cousin, you know, and it's, I'm from Brighton. I'm really proud to be from Brighton. I'm really proud. And a way of showing that is supporting the Albion.
Well, it is. It's the new religion, though, Dan, isn't it? I mean, basically,
yeah.
It's because it's always been very, very tribal. You have your tribe,
absolutely tribal.
Go, and you go to worship your heroes every week, and it's.
But there is only one deity,
and it's communal. It's communal singing. It's exactly what the church used to do.
Yeah, well, that's very that. True. Very
I don't think anybody has ever gone to worship Ashley Neal.
Or Michael Mahoney Johnson, or I'll Damien in, Hilton.
Can I throw in Jamie Campbell?
Jamie Campbell, left back. Yeah.
So, Dean, with all these stories in mind here, what we didn't get to the bottom of was, what was your first Albion experience?
I can remember going to my first game. It was I can't remember the opposition, but it was a 2-2 draw in 1972. I'm on the east stand. I'm 59, so thank you very much. And we went with my dad and brother, and we just stood there, and it was just that combination of seeing the green grass, well, what grass there was on the pitch,
yeah,
and actually just the atmosphere and being close to the action. It just was magical, and from that moment you're hooked. You know, and I'm sure we all have those moments in our lives where you're living and breathing it for that first time, and then you just want to come back again.
Yeah.
When you say 1972, are we talking the promotion season or the horrific season that followed?
It would be in the promotion season.
Right, because I've got Tim Carter's book here, and I can tell you that in 1972, the 72 part of it, we didn't draw a game at home, 2-2.
Okay.
So...
Hang on.
Yeah. Well, I'm messing with your mind now.
I've got Tim Carter's Excel spreadsheet, which I shouldn't have said on the radio because it's top secret. But obviously,
for those who are listening on the radio, Kieran's face just lit up at the word spreadsheet.
So what it enables me to do is look at that season, and then obviously I can tell you all of the 2-2 draws.
Yeah, I can see some away ones. Right. I'm looking at Tim Carter's book. You're looking at something that you've concocted from thin air, apparently, Dan.
Yeah. So it's obviously, I'm just trying to add credence to it by mentioning the club historian's name. It's just something I made myself with all 6,000 results from the club's history on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
The slow news, David.
Okay. So, yeah, season 71-72. Certainly in the 72 part of it, we didn't draw a game at home 2-2. So Dean, you've got to go and revisit your own mind now.
I certainly will. Yes.
we'll find it by the end of the show. Okay, just before we move on, obviously, we have got to just finish off this Liverpool. I mean, we lost the game. Liverpool. There was some brilliant stuff going on. You mentioned him earlier, Kieran, and I think he is a player that hasn't really got too many plaudits so far this year, but he's really kind of like come from nowhere, and that is Yassin Ayari. And there was one pass he made in this game, and it's one of the best passes I've ever seen, I think, which is just a shame that Jorginho didn't finish.
Yes, it was not dissimilar to what we saw from Cole Palmer the previous weekend, which did lead to a goal. And I think if it had done, then the pundits would have been purring over it. He's one of those players, because I've looked at some of the comments from opposing fans or previously, and he's not been ripping up trees, but clearly, Fabian's seen something in him, and that choice has been vindicated, and now we've when we lost Pascal Gross and Billy Gilmore on top of losing Moises Caicedo and Alexis McAllister the previous season, I thought, what are we going to do in terms of a midfield? But now we've got three players effectively looking for two places. In the sense that we've got Ayari, Baleba and Hinchelwood. And that's ignoring the fact that we spent £25 million on FIFA. And we've got Matt O'Reilly to come back as well. So all of a sudden we're looking, it's not slim pickings, it's looking the opposite of it.
It's a massive headache, isn't it, Dan?
Honestly, with the names you've just reeled off, when we signed those nine new players in the close season, and I was just sort of pinching myself going, hang on, so we've spent all this money to say, was it more than Real Madrid? Was it just...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you actually put that into context, it's mind-blowing. So the options, and obviously most of the options are wide players, which would suggest they're, so we're going to play in a certain way, but maybe strengthening at the back could have been. But then again, I'm not complaining. I still can't believe it. I still can't believe the players that we've brought in. Jorginho particularly, I was very surprised, but his strength is unbelievable. The way he holds the ball up. So yeah, I'm excited for when everyone gets fit. Obviously O'Reilly against the Crawley game, I had a good view of that assault from that Crawley player after 7 minutes. I can't say his name.
Gruder.
Yeah. He's looking good. And also Ferdy after a shaky start. He's looking
excellent.
Just don't
have Ferdy anywhere near the defence, that's all.
I like his tenacity. I like the way he seems hungry.
You've just mentioned a bunch of Dutch masters there playing for us. We've got five now.
I know. Yeah, that went down very well in the pub in Nijmegen on Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, talking about Jorginho, Dean, it's the one thing I really like about him is he looks like he's always really enjoying himself. There's so many players that don't play with a smile on his face, but he just looks delighted just to be out there.
I think the great thing is that the first game he played for us, we were all like, not quite sure, hope he's going to be good. And then with each successive game that's come along, he just got better and better. And you're absolutely right. To see a player play with a smile on his face is just fantastic, isn't it? It's absolutely really great. Yeah. And the fact that he is always on the shoulder of the attacking player and ready to take that pass, and he's looking up the whole time. We've got a hell of a footballer there.
Yeah, if only he finished that chance, it would have been 2-0 up and we could have come home with three.
His second half performance against Spurs was, I think he was the catalyst. I mean, obviously he got a goal and an assist, but that's the kind of finish we want. I can't say that we've had, particularly since Glenn Murray, a finisher who normally sticks it away. Like, and I include Danny Welbeck in this. For the goal that he scored, that was a real sort of a buzzy, like you say, on the shoulder type goal. I mean, Welbeck, he can score them like that, but Jorginho's finish, I thought, was just different. Sorry, different gravy.
Well, there we go. Yeah. Okay, well, obviously we lost the game. I was very, very, I was pleased that Gakpo had the good grace to admit that it was actually a complete and utter fluke, and it was meant to be a cross that eluded everyone, but before it sailed into the top corner. Then we've already alluded to Salah's goal. Again, Purvis should have shown him down the wing. You can't give someone that amount of time and to cut inside. It was just really, really poor defending from our point of view. But we move on, and obviously Man City to come this weekend, which we might touch on a little bit later. But first, you're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Now, Alan, Dave Costa from Flowers Unlimited, he's going to have a competition for us in the next couple of weeks, I believe.
Yes, so well, with Christmas coming along and the likes of Flowers Unlimited being able to supply all the decorative things that you might require, he's got a workshop of all things at the Albion making Christmas wreaths. Now, that sounds actually generally like an interesting thing. We would have one on our front door, but it's made of glass, and I think if you try and nail that to the door, I think we would have a problem. But yeah, they're hosting workshops there, so if you fancy taking part, then watch this space. But he's we've got a couple of things that Dave's happy to give us. So Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road in Hove, for all your floral necessities, for any particular reason you can think of. It's a better alternative than going to the park and stealing flowers. And if you're an Albion season ticket holder, then just let them know and you automatically get 20% off your any purchase at the shop. And tell them that we sent you. So, yeah, thanks, Dave, for your continuing support. Flowers Unlimited, that's at 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove.
Okay, well, Kieran, you've recently celebrated a landmark, I believe, which is 5 years of the price of football. How did that happen?
How did we get to 5 years? I'm as baffled by that as anybody else. I guess we got that far because people wanted to listen to the show. When we started it, the intention was to do 20 minutes once a week, and now we're doing 2 to 3 shows of an hour, and we could do more in terms of the amount of content. Yeah. I think we've been fortunate that COVID meant that there was not a lot else to do than perhaps to consume content, and we were there when football was going through some strange times with Super League and Project Big Picture and lots of unpleasant things. And I happen to work with two very professional people who make me look very good. So I sort of ride that particular way. But I think we've had something like 15 million downloads now, which is decent numbers by podcast standards.
Yeah. I mean, Kieran, we were talking just now about bad owners, and you said that, if only there was 20 Paul Barbers in the Premier League or 92 across the whole league and beyond. So, I mean, but if we didn't have that, there probably wouldn't be a show, would there?
No, it's one of those terrible things that bad news sells. And we have, never through intention, we have become a campaigning show in respect of clubs which are in crisis. So Wigan, Derby, Reading, Morecambe, Rochdale at times, Scunthorpe, Inverness, Cali Thistle at present. Even clubs such as Llandudno in the North Wales League. We don't care which league you're in because, as Dan was saying earlier, it's part of belonging to somewhere that matters when you're a fan, and where that town or city is an irrelevance. And we've been quite fortunate. We've managed to get guests to come on the show to articulate either position of fans. We're recording a show tomorrow with Mark Ives, who's the general manager of the National League. That's an interesting place at present, given the opposition to FA Cup replays, which I think has disappointed many National League fans, given the opposition to the football regulator, which just coincided with the decision by the National League to sign up with a competition to play the Premier League under 21 teams or PL2 teams. So we have become a campaigning show. But at the same time, we've tried to do that in a non-partisan, fair way to go through the reasons and to pick the bones as to why individual clubs are where they are today. And it's a horrible thing to say. 80% of the stuff that I find out, I can't publish, because trying to get a second independent source to back things up is difficult. And for litigation purposes, it's not feasible. So yeah, I describe it as a brown book in that just the top 10% of the mucky stuff that we do put out on the show, and the other 90%, we're waiting to try to get further evidence.
So sorry, go on, Al.
So I was just thinking, you were talking about sort of back in the early days of doing this, and you're saying you were going to do 20 minutes once a week. So somewhere down the line, and obviously we knew that you were the one who sort of demystified club accounts for us. I mean, on Albion fans' behalf. But so there must have been someone who said, actually, we could do with a podcast about football finances. I mean, is it? I know they say this in publishing, a vanity project, or did someone genuinely approach you from either a supporters group or a fans representative or something like that, and say, can we have a kind of a bit more of a sort of an expose on how football is financed? I mean, sorry, the point I might ask, the sort of question I'm asking is that, as much as you're saying there was, you know, only a sort of a certain amount you thought that people would want to listen to, someone somewhere decided that there must be something that must be put out there. So how did that start?
I used to do quite a lot of work with the BBC, because I was living not too far away from Salford Quays, mm-hmm. where the BBC Five Live studios were. And I used to do a show called Wake Up to Money quite often. And that takes place between 5 and 6 a.m. So you got to know the business producers. And one of them did pitch to more senior management to put out a football finance podcast. And the response was, it's too niche. And also, this isn't a criticism, because I'm a huge fan of the BBC. My face didn't fit.
What do you mean?
Too old, too middle class, too educated. You know, we want a more youth orientated lineup of shows. And
your heart sinks when you hear that, doesn't it? I mean, a youth thing, just does it matter?
Well, it clearly mattered to the person making the decision.
Christ.
And then, ironically, one of the guys at the BBC decided he was going to pack in doing the 5 o'clock in the morning show. A guy set up a podcast production company. Because I'd been on the show so often, he said, I want you to be our first show. So it was a leap of faith by Guy Kilty, who is the legendary producer guy. Sort of the third spoke on the wheel as far as the show is concerned. And again, it's his professionalism, which I think has certainly helped, because he's the person, after I've recorded a show with Kevin, that assiduously goes through and removes all of the coughs, all of the ums, all of the ahs. And because he's a professional journalist, if I do go over the limit as to what is appropriate to say, he'll edit it out.
Yeah, but does he really live in the gold house? That's the important question.
Well, I've been to his house. I can't possibly answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kieran, obviously you have had some very, very interesting guests on the show over the years. And one, is it true that you were not allowed to talk to Mahéta Malango about his goal in 12 seconds?
No. Mahéta was. I mean, Mahéta's been on the show twice, and he's. I now work for Mahéta, because I'm now doing training work for the Professional Footballers Association in terms of the courses that they're offering to players as part of the transition from dressing room to boardroom. Is effectively the angle. He was absolutely brilliant, and he describes himself as a journeyman footballer. He's very upfront. He does talk about that goal. He's a ridiculously smart guy, very self-deprecating, and it's a pleasure to work with him.
Yeah, I think we'd love to have him on here at some point. Wouldn't we?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Now, Kieran, as to coin a phrase, football finance comes home. this month. So, because obviously you got the podcast, but you also like to see the people you're talking to. So tell us what you've got coming up very soon.
Well, Dean and I go back a long way. I mean, we first met playing down Hoverec in 1983. We were a fairly efficient centre-half combination. I think it's lacking in sophistication. But that's how we got to know each other. So I've been going to matches with Dean for a long, long time. And yeah, we are very good mates, and we've got a good understanding of each other. Dean has been working since Dean, you know, I'll just let him tell the story, but Dean is now working for Samaritans, doing an amazing job. I think a job which very few people can do. And I've, you know, I've got to listen to him as to the challenges fiscally, mentally, physically of the role that he has, and his mentors and his colleagues have. And I spoke to Kevin and I said, look, this is something we believe. We've done work for other charities, and I'd love to do a show in Brighton. And the reason why Kevin Day is the co-host is because he did a benefit gig for Brighton Hove Albion back in the mid-90s.
I remember I put that on. Yeah.
And that's one of those things which, again, we should be proud of, is that, you know, a Palace fan recognises that you can't have a rivalry without rivals. Mm. And he's still bitter that he never got paid his expenses, by the way. He still goes on about it.
He never mentions it. It never does.
I was about to say, as much as I promoted it, it was someone else who dealt with the money. So, yeah. So with that, tell us about your part in this then, Dean.
So I retired about 2.5 years ago, and I was looking for something else to do, something that I had a passion for that certainly wasn't insurance anymore. So I wanted to do something very different. And I thought, okay, I dealt with the team. I needed to do something. And actually, I worked out during that period, I actually liked people, which was kind of
insurance.
Yeah. But actually, running a team was very different from looking after yourself. So actually, during that process, I was like, okay, this is something I think I can do and I really want to do. So I applied to be a volunteer. Everyone's a volunteer. And it was just really, these 2 years I've been doing it have been fantastic. It's opened my eyes, stretched me enormously, and made me at times really uncomfortable, at times really emotional, at times really rewarded and rewarding. But you know what? It every shift is different. Every time you speak to someone, you're getting something slightly different.
Yeah. So is it you're one of the guys that's actually on the phones answering the calls?
Yeah. So in these 2 years, I've gone from being a volunteer that's newly come on board to being on the phones to now being a mentor with some mentees that come through the ranks and are just coming on board to helping them through that process.
Yeah.
And my most recent role has been to join the fundraising team. And the fundraising team, we need every single day £165 to keep the doors open.
Mm. Wow.
So we don't get any money from anybody. So we start with zero every year. I was talking to Kieran, and actually I'll just tell you exactly what happened. Kieran and I were having a chat with our wives over late night cocktails. Well, I was on espresso martinis. Kieran was on his usual lime and sodas. And we were just chatting about stuff. And he said, we could put a gig on for you. I was like, okay, talk me through that. And basically, cutting a long story very short, the support him, Kevin, Julian and others have been for this event has been incredible. Really, it's just been so nice. And actually, we had a training day with Samaritans yesterday. But to be able to stand up in front of people and talk them through the support that we've got, and also the fact that Kieran has given us a shirt to auction
It's not incredible. Just any shirt, though, is it? I know the shirt in question, and this is actually Kieran's pride and joy. He's had it up on his wall bows to it every single day.
Let's hear about it. Come on.
Well, in October 2004, was it 2005? Brighton Hove Albion were away to Crystal Palace, and owing to a bit of a faux pas in relation to the design of kits that year, we realised we couldn't use the first kit, second kit, or third kit at Selhurst because they all clashed. So the Albion brought out a special one-off white, pure white kit.
Yes, they did.
And Paul McShane scored the winning goal in the second half.
It was
a shirt with skint on the front of the label, as we know. And it was ironic, also, as we know. And the Albion were so skint that they put every single shirt up for auction to raise money for the club. So I paid £835 for it. And then in terms of the history of it, when I was getting divorced a few years later, all that I had to take away with me, or all I was began to take away with me, was going to be my dog, one suitcase, and an 8-year-old VW Golf. And there was no room. I didn't have anywhere to live. There was no room for the shirt. So I auctioned the shirt at the time for rent, and I managed to get somebody to pay 500 quid for it.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that bought it from me, and this is a cursed shirt, by the way, he then got divorced, and he offered to sell it back to me for 500 quid.
So that's why it's going to the Samaritans.
And now I've decided it's sitting in my man cave, for that better phrase. Yeah, am I emotionally attached to it? Yes. But I've been so inspired, you know, when I talk to Dean and hearing about the work that Samaritans do, that to put it up for sale and knowing that it's going to help people to help people, I think was sort of just a fair and appropriate thing to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, Dean, can you give us? I know you just said just now every single day that you work is different, but do you is the work you do specifically local or is it all part of a national network?
Just for correctness, we volunteer. Okay, so we don't work per se.
Right, the work you do, the work you undertake.
Yeah. Great. So we take calls nationally, so we can get calls from anywhere in the UK. Sometimes internationally, we do get calls patched through, but we're just designed for UK calls. But we do outreach things such as Pride, Trans Pride. We do training at GP surgeries. We do pop-ups at stations. We try to get out in the community to actually help people. And not just suicidal people that are vulnerable.
Yeah. Is that the kind of work that you obviously appreciate what I'm getting at, Dean. Is that the kind of thing that you get you yourself get involved in?
Yeah, I mean, I've done some outreach things. We've got a team in Brighton and Hove of, I think it's 180 people. Mm-hmm. And actually one of the things we were celebrating was that actually we haven't lost anyone in 3 months in terms of our volunteer group, because it's a leaky bucket scenario. You have to keep on topping up the volunteers because actually people do other things in their lives, understandably. Well, what we're trying to do is actually hold it whole as long as possible because the amount of things we want to do in the next year, and actually we want to go further into the community. We want to help more people on a wider basis, as well as doing the spones.
Okay, we'll get the details of Kieran's show in a second. But while you're here, obviously there's you're saying it's £165 a day just to exist. So there are obviously ways to contribute to the Samaritans. So can you just give us a quick heads up as to how people, even just on the simplest of ways, can contribute towards the Samaritans?
Well, I mean, two things. I would encourage people, if they're feeling vulnerable, to call us. And that's a statement, okay? In terms of people can actually, if they want to, become a volunteer with Samaritans. And actually the financial aspect is that they can become a friend of Samaritans. So donate on a monthly basis, a set amount or a one-off amount, and actually gift aid can be applied to that. So actually, yeah, directly, do we need funds? Yes, we do. Are we doing better than we once were? Yes, we are. But actually, we'll always need more money.
Okay, yeah. And how do people in the short term, if they want to go online and donate, where do they go?
Brighton Hove Samaritans. And it's as simple as that. Follow the links. And yeah, you'll find us.
Okay, yeah. Great stuff.
And okay, Kieran, the show is on the 15th of November.
That's right. If you go on to Eventbrite, you can get tickets from there. And if anybody listening wants to bid for the shirt, the email address, Dean, is?
It is the longest email address in the history of the world.
Yes.
It's fundraising@brightonsamaritans.org.
Okay. We'll pull a link up to that on the show.
Absolutely.
Anyway, okay, so get yourself along to the Brighton Unitarian Church. Get on the 15th of November and go and see Kieran and a Palace fan called Kevin Day. And we will try and force feed Kevin some quinoa. That is what we're going to do, because it's what he wants and it's what he deserves. Okay, Daniel Tester, you have a book out.
Yeah, yes, I do. Just before that, I'd like to say, Dean and Kieran, amazing what you're doing. I'd like to chuck you a few books if you want to, I don't know, raffle them or whatever, or get them signed by the players to hopefully raise some funds, because I really respect what you're doing.
Thank
I
you.
Think it's wonderful. Yes, AD, Brighton of Albion on this day, edition three.
Edition three. So
yes.
This is the first one. This is second. The first one came out in 2007, didn't it?
Correct, yes.
So,
and then I rewrote that in 2011 for when the stadium opened. I completely rewrote the first one. Then obviously we've had 13 years. Quite a lot's happened in those 13 years. Predominantly positive, I'd say, for like compared to the previous stuff I wrote about. I rewrote it and sort of went back memory first. So I did obviously all the European games, the big Premier League games, the promotions to the Premier League, blah, blah, blah. And then players coming in, players going, managerial stuff. And then obviously with the stadium opening, landmarks to do with the stadium. And then initially when I started writing the book in 2007, I went to the history library for about a week, went through loads of microfiche and just really got into the absolute depths of Albion history, read all the history books I could with post-it notes. So I was trying to get stuff. It would have been easy just to do, we played this team and the score was this, and then that's pretty boring. Obviously, that's the biggest part of Albion's history is matches played. But I also wanted to get under the skin a bit and put the stuff like, you know, Maradona, when Maradona was linked with the Albion, when Carlo Campbell bought a load of cheetahs because he wanted to introduce them to greyhound racing at Hove in 1937. Yeah. If you were going to ask me what my favourite inclusion is in the book,
I was.
It's that. So,
hang on. Slams on brakes. Hang on.
Yeah.
Major Carlo Campbell brought along some cheetahs, and we're not talking.
Right. It's not very long, so I can read it for you if you want.
Please do.
Friday, the 30th of June, 2006, the Argus reported that the war medals of former Albion chairman, Captain William Charles Carlo Campbell, were to be auctioned. He was decorated for gallantry while flying more than 20 sorties within a few months during World War I, but was best known for an abortive bid to bring cheetah racing to Britain in 1937. He imported six cheetahs to perk up greyhound racing at White City in West London, but the 70-mile-an-hour creatures failed to muster the necessary competitive spirit. An observer recalled that they just wandered about. Greyhounds could be relied on to race an entire track and through the finish line. The gamblers could get odds on dogs to finish first or second, or to place. Cheetahs, on the other hand, were immune to the demands of the tote, and if one took an early lead, the others would simply stop, sensibly saving their energy. There you go.
I've got a Dostoevsky move aside. We've got stories of greyhounds being chased by... Wow.
Yeah, so I wanted to try and include...
They're not all as exciting
stuff.
As out of those entries,
no,
are they?
No, that's... Thanks, Al. Yeah, I'm obviously... Alan worked on my book, so thank you, Al, for all you did.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, I
well,
mean,
you paid me, which is good.
Some of it's on time, I hasten to add. Before it was due, I hasten to add again. So, yeah, it's out. It's out. It's I published it myself, which was hard work. But yeah, I've
It was
published a
dealing
book
with the
myself.
printers, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, well, it's print on demand, you see, because the technology's improved so much that you can't tell anymore if things are print on demand or not. So that was a big reason why I did it.
Well,
And
I've got to
obviously.
say, can I just say, as someone who's been in publishing since 1986, irrespective of, the fact that we did the layout together and what have you, that all the things that you brought together in this, the text, the humor, the wit, the love that's clear and on show in this, this is actually a nice little pocket dynamo of a present that you can get for people. 276 pages of pure joy, probably
Yeah.
one or two bits of misery as well, but.
And it fits perfectly into a Christmas stocking, which is coming up,
Who
strangely.
knew? Who
It
knew?
does, I mean, that
Yes.
would be cynical to say that, wouldn't it, Kieran?
It would a little bit.
Right. Now, Dan, you were good enough. You were good enough to offer our listener of the Albion Raw a copy of the book as a prize.
Absolutely, yes, of
So,
course.
with that in mind, in order to have a chance of winning a copy of Brighton & Hove Albion on this day, third edition, your question is from the 9th of November, 1996. The entry reads, Albion fans made the ultimate sacrifice by boycotting the home game against Mansfield Town in an effort to bring down the hated regime of Archer, Stanley and Bellotti. The official attendance that day was just how many? And this is quite a well-known figure. So if you can just let us know what the official, believe me, pretendance was very much a thing in those days as
Yes,
well.
yes.
What was
It's got
the
to be the
official attendance of
exact
that match of
attendance.
Brighton against Mansfield on the day that the Albion fans boycotted it on the 9th of November 1996? So if you can put down your answer and send it to thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. Closing date will be Tuesday the 12th of November at 5 p.m. And we will select a winner from all the correct answers. There is one caveat we must say, though, is that the winner must be in the UK. Okay, so what was the official attendance of the boycotted match between Albion and Mansfield Town on the 9th of November 1996? Good luck, everyone.
But of course, Dan, you don't know anything about fanzines at all, would you?
No, I mean, well, obviously, Scars and Stripes does feature heavily in the book because, as it should,
Who
you
knew?
know.
So, just quickly, Dan, you've got a couple of book launches come up, and where else can we get copies of this book?
Right, it is available on Amazon, but Amazon, unfortunately, the technology of them ordering books is a bit up and down, so it might look like the book's more expensive than it is. It's $13.99. Do not pay any more than $13.99 unless you're buying one off me personally. So if you go on Amazon and you see it's more than that, just click buy. It will go back down. eBay for a limited time, I'm doing signed copies on eBay with a personalized message if you so wish. North Stand chat, there's a link on there to Amazon as well, so you can get it from there. And obviously the club shop and the
And
club shop in town when it's open
you've
to
got a couple of
Christmas.
book launches coming up as well.
Yeah, sorry mate. Yeah, so 27th of November, which is a Wednesday, at the Caxton Arms, I'm hoping to get an Albion player from the past to do a Q&A with me and Ryan Adsett. And then on the Thursday, I'm doing a launch in Worthing at the Broadwater pub. Again, TBC, I guess, but I'm hoping to secure quite a pivotal figure from Albion's past.
Brilliant. So, Brighton and Hove Albion on this day, published by Off the Bench Books by Dan Tester, is out now and it is a superb book. I can thoroughly recommend it. And with Christmas coming up and everyone stuck for ideas, there's your $13.99 book.
Indeed, that is all we have time for this week. So just before we do, like pull the plug on the show, Kieran, when is your show and where can you get tickets again?
It's Friday the 15th of November. At Brighton Utilitarian Church, and you can get tickets from Eventbrite. Just type in price of football. We're hoping to confirm a guest from the show, so from the club. And perhaps we're also trying to get somebody who used to play for the club but not replying to emails at present.
couldn't possibly think who that might be, Kieran. But that is all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Kieran Maguire, to Dan Tester, to Dean Gallagher, to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on our podcast, and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Cheers. Bye.
When you're down and troubled, and you need some love and care, and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there. You've got a friend. Winter, spring, summer.